From Iowa Public Radio, I'm Janine Beck, and this is The Exchange. New figures show a 38% increase in Iowa's homeless population. There are now 23,000 Iowans without a place to live and another 15,000 on the verge of homelessness. More than half are under the age of 18. Who are these people and what's causing them to lose everything? Unemployment, illness, addiction? Could it happen to you? This hour on The Exchange, we'll speak with a Cedar Rapids man struggling to get back on his feet, and we'll find out what the government is or is not doing to help. Experts say there aren't enough shelter beds to meet demand and not enough affordable housing for the working poor. Join the discussion next on The Exchange, but first, the news. Good afternoon. This is The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Janine Beck. The average mortgage in Iowa is $1,100, about 78% of the average income for many families. For those who are poor, it might be essentially an illness, an accident, or a paycheck away from living on the streets. Today, we're going to discuss homelessness in Iowa. And in fact, the numbers show it's a growing problem, 38% increase in the population just last year. First to join us on our program this morning, Chris, who has asked us not to divulge his last name. Chris is currently living in Cedar Rapids, but struggling with homelessness. Chris, thank you so much for being on the program.
You're very welcome.
Let me just start with you and ask you about how you came to be homeless. What happened?
Actually, I am from Louisiana, and difference with family members, I was kicked out the house. My uncle, before he passed away in 2008, was a native of Des Moines, so I am familiar with Iowa per se. As soon as I came up here to the Cedar Rapids area, I learned that the economy was a little bit better, the job market, although be it tough, was not impossible compared to down in Louisiana. I utilize resources where I'm staying right now, Mission of Help Shelter, wonderful place in Cedar Rapids, excellent resources, pointed me in the right direction, and hopefully by week's end, I will be in my own place.
Go ahead.
It took me about 2.5 months to get to the point where I am, so it is not impossible.
How old are you, Chris? Let's get a picture of you and your life, kind of, and what led to this.
I will be 27 in August.
And so when you came to Iowa, did you have employment, or did you come just knowing you were going to need assistance right off the bat?
I was fortunate enough, before I was asked to leave my home in Louisiana, I had applied to Walmart and had that process going. And as soon as I got up here into Iowa, I believe it was a Monday, I immediately got on the phone and called into Walmart and tried to set up an interview, which I was successful in doing so, and they hired me basically on the spot. And due to some personal issues that I choose not to divulge, I was asked to leave Walmart, and currently I'm employed at Hy-Vee, a grocery store over here in Cedar Rapids.
And is that something that would surprise people? You're, as you said, staying at Mission of Help Shelter. Are there people like you who are employed and staying at the shelter? Because I think sometimes people would assume that you don't have employment and that's why you're homeless.
The majority of the residents are employed. Like I said, I don't know everybody's particular situation, but the majority of people that I see are average Joes you would find with millions of dollars. They are trying their best. They are out there every day searching for a job. It is not easy in any market. I see that every day. I mean, I'm fortunate enough to have a vehicle to take me to and from places, and I've been willing to assist those who are looking for a job, who are making the effort to get out there and look for a job. I mean, you have to get out there and push yourself. You cannot give up. By sitting down and saying, woe is me, or this is not going to get better, it's not helping anybody, or it's not helping yourself. You're going to get into that mindset to where I'm going to need to depend upon food stamps all the time. I need to depend upon assistance to get into an apartment and continue to use that assistance, which I firmly believe you get out there and you try your best, you will succeed. Things do get better.
You said you were 27. Have you ever experienced this before? Had you been homeless before, or was this your first time?
No, this would actually be my second time being homeless. I was up in Duluth, Minnesota, which is about 5 hours away from Cedar Rapids area. Another great resources up in Duluth, wonderful people, just, I mean, an outpouring of assistance. But at the same token, you have to give back. I know here in Cedar Rapids area, they ask you once you do become self-sufficient that you either volunteer your time back to pay the resources they paid out, or you donate money, you donate clothes, whatever you're able to do. They do ask for that in return, which I am very grateful for. I'm excited that they have that program in place because it will go to help others.
Were you, you know, there's a stigma associated with it. Were you embarrassed? Did you feel sort of invisible, or were you ready to seek help and didn't take that into account?
I wasn't embarrassed because I knew that there is help beyond what had happened to me. I knew that if I took that attitude and felt shameful and felt embarrassed, that it's only going to hurt me in the long run. I don't believe in looking back in the past. What happened, happened, and now I have to pull myself up by the bootstraps and say, okay, today is a new day. I am going to get a job. I am going to seek help. And by having that mindset, things happen when they need to happen. You put it in God's hands and say, okay, today's the day to open up the door for this job, or today's the day to open up the door for this apartment, then it's going to be. But if you sit there and try to force it, that's whenever you get frustrated. And that's when you want to give up. And you can't let yourself get to that point. That's how I feel.
Do your coworkers know of your, you know, situation? I mean, or did you tell your current employer, or did you feel like that could be a hindrance to you, that if you, you know, explained your situation that they might be leery?
No, I haven't divulged it. And I'm on the notion that if someone wants to judge me because I'm homeless or because I don't have everything that they might have, that's on them. It's a form of, I think it's a form of discrimination that if they weren't going to hire me because I was homeless. So I'm out there trying. I'm just the same as they are. I put my pants on the same way they do every morning.
And many of us have never lived in a shelter or have never experienced that. When you go there, I mean, talk to me about the accommodations. And I think that many of us might be aware that there are rules. You know, you do need to, they do ask you to leave during the day in many cases to seek work and that kind of thing. Tell me, what was it like when you arrived? What kind of accommodations are there and what are the rules?
I don't know exactly the vision of Mission of Hope Shelter. I've been asked not to try to go on those lines. But from my experience, there are a set of rules, and those rules are in place to protect myself from any harm that might happen out on the streets. It's the shelter that I'm in is great. It allows you to get out and do things, to take care of your personal business, to find a job, to find an apartment. They encourage you to do that, and they will provide you with the resources to do that. And if they see that you're making the effort to do that, from my personal experience, I had to leave about a week ago to fly back home to my home state to take care of some personal matters. I was worried about not having a place to come back home to. Well, as it turned out, I was welcomed back with open arms, and I believe it's because of my hard work and dedication to getting out there and getting a job, keeping a job, looking for apartments. So if they see effort, you will get effort in return from them.
Chris, can you afford an apartment on your own? I mean, is that part of the hang-up, that it's difficult to do that, or can you?
At this point in time, I am working through a program here in Cedar Rapids called HACAP, and they provide assistance. I don't know exactly what the stipulation are, because I just started working with them today, mm-hmm. believe it or not. And they do assist you with rent. They do assist you with hookup of cable or gas or electric.
Let's bring on Tim Wilson, who's the executive director of the Willis Dady Emergency Shelter in Cedar Rapids. Mr. Wilson, thank you for joining the program.
Good afternoon, Janine.
Your shelter has served 10,000 single men and families since opening in 1987. It's in Cedar Rapids, and it serves Linn County primarily, free of charge to help stabilize residents and help them move forward toward change. When you listen to Chris's story, is this common? You know, just the 2 months and then maybe you can kind of get things going again and get an apartment, or can it take longer than that?
I have to say, as Chris was talking, I was nodding in agreement with a lot of the things that he was saying as far as his experience. Unfortunately, Chris's experience is not it's not unusual, but it's not the rule. There are so many homeless folks in Iowa and throughout the U.S. suffer in particular from substance abuse issues and mental health issues, and a lot of times those are in combination. And those barriers and sometimes other barriers, a month or two is just not enough to overcome them, even with case management, with somebody in your corner helping to get you connected with the counseling and other resources.
What about that stigma that I asked Chris about? When people arrive, are they – I mean, by the time they get to you what has happened in their lives oftentimes? And we talking to Chris, who's a single gentleman, but when I look at the statistics, over half, 54% of these people who are homeless are under 18. Is that teenagers or is that families?
It's a combination. There are a number of homeless teens in Iowa that are served by shelters that tend to specifically serve those that population. But a lot of them are family members. And at Willis Ady, we have four family units, which are full all the time. And we have that can be a single father with children or a single mother in some cases if she has a son who's 11 or older. And they range in age from newborns. In fact, we've had moms who gave birth while they were they gave birth at the hospital, but while they were staying at Willis Ady, mm-hmm. on up to high school age kids.
And so when they come, what is their feeling at that point? What has brought them there typically?
It varies so much. Everybody's circumstances are a little bit different, but the I'd say for younger children, they're very young children, they're probably aware that there's disruption and that they're moving about, but that may be the whole existence that they've known, that that's not unusual. By the time kids get to be in middle grade school and older, they really know what's going on. They compare notes with their friends at school. And when we've had I remember last year we had a situation where we had a young man who, to the disappointment of his parents and his coach, quit. He was on a junior varsity or varsity football team at one of the local high schools, and he quit. And it wasn't until looking through the records I realized that this individual had his 16th birthday had come, and he spent his 16th birthday in a homeless shelter. And I thought, wow, that's probably got something to do with his, giving up on football.
Mm-hmm. And the, are the parents that come or even the single people, when they get there, are they relieved to have help? Are they embarrassed? Are they, do they hesitate to come? Do they look for other ways first? We're going to take a quick break. I want to address that when we come back and talk to you about how they feel when they arrive, because that can be a real barrier to getting assistance if there's an embarrassment factor, I'm sure. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. We're talking about Iowa's homeless population, which grew substantially in 2009. Join our conversation when we return at 1-800-786-780-9100. This is The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. There are now 23,000 Iowans without a place to live, another 15,000 on the verge of homelessness, and more than half are under the age of 18. We're discussing the homeless issue in Iowa today on The Exchange with Tim Wilson, the executive director of the Willis Dady Emergency Shelter in Cedar Rapids, and Chris, who is currently living at a homeless shelter in Cedar Rapids. Thank you both for being on the program. Before we broke, we just talked about the mindset of people who arrive at the shelter. Some people would have family to turn to if they lost their home, lost their apartment. Others, like Chris, found themselves out of sorts with family and ended up in a shelter. What brings them to you, Tim? I know you said it's a variety of circumstances, but by the time they get to you, what's their morale like?
Sure. Well, a lot of folks have come from a situation where they've been living with other family. And for them, it can be just a feeling of, well, we used up our time. I think in some of those cases there may be a little bit of shame involved, but in other cases it's a situation where wherever they were staying, they just didn't feel safe for one reason or another. And for them, definitely it's a relief to have a shelter like Willis Dady or any of our other excellent family shelters here in Iowa to go to and to hopefully have find some folks that are going to help them get employment, get back on their feet, make sure that their children are getting the support they need, and help them hopefully get into their own place as quickly as possible.
That struck me interesting that you said that, because I would think a lot of people might assume that the shelter is the least safe place to go, that if they stayed with friends or family, that that would feel more safe. But you're saying that you are safe at a shelter.
Very much so. I mean, I can't speak for every shelter in Iowa, but at Willis Thady, we have go through a great many procedures and policies to make sure that folks are safe. We have security cameras. And in fact, we're just finishing up on renovations from an iJobs grant. And one of the things that helped us to do was make the shelter even safer.
How many people do you have to turn away? How many beds do you have, and how often do you turn people away?
We have 16 beds for single men and 4 family units. The family units are quite large. They're 2 bedrooms with a living room, and you could actually have a family of 8 staying there in each of those units if the teenagers were willing to sleep on the couches. We were able, unfortunately, to serve fewer than half the families that approach us for a place to stay, so we turn away more people than we're able to help, which is really heartbreaking. Men, the beds tend to turn over faster, so we're able to serve more or less we're able to serve 90-plus percent of those who come to us.
And that figure that I talked about, a 38% increase in Iowa's homeless population, are you seeing that? Are you feeling that?
We definitely have. Not that we've been sort of there's not many times when we have to turn away a lot of people. It's just that what used to be in past years kind of slower times where people we'd have fewer beds full, there's less of that. It's pretty much full, or 75% or better capacity on the men's side pretty much all the time.
All right. Let's take to the phones right now and talk to Jake in Mason City. Jake, thanks for calling The Exchange.
Yeah, hello.
Hi.
I just want to talk about how there was a while ago, but I at a time didn't have a place to live, and, it was tough, but part of it a lot was just kind of what I was doing. I know that's not the case for everybody by any means at all, but, I found out once I kind of just really got after it and kind of just put everything I had into, getting a place to live and, have a job and everything. It was all working out. It kind of reminds me of something that's going on right now in the media about the voter intimidation and that the Justice Department's refusing to prosecute. And it just kind of ties in together in the sense that if you don't prosecute people that are breaking the law and if you don't do the things you're supposed to do, bad things are going to happen.
What weren't you doing, Jake? Talk to me about your circumstances. I mean, what you said that things that you felt you were doing wrong.
Just like a common thing for a lot of the lower income people, buying alcohol, buying lottery tickets. I'm not out here to say that everybody does that, but it's a big problem, just the fact, when you go see like food stamps used and you see the most expensive lemonade bought and, most expensive everything. You can get the Imitation Ranch for $1.49. You're buying the best stuff for $4. Just making better.
But what
choices.
Turned that around for you? Did you have some money management assistance provided to you, or did you end up in a shelter at one point?
Not really. No, I just kind of. I mean, people would. You could call it money management assistance. It was. That's a nice way to call it. But people telling me not to be an idiot. Basically was what it ended up being. When you don't have a place to live and you're buying lottery tickets, you're buying booze and cigarettes, all that stuff, you really don't have anyone to blame but yourself. That's
all right,
my opinion. Now that I look back and see, when you add up all that, when you have $10 in your pocket, it doesn't seem like much. You can buy, a beer and a pack of cigarettes and you're good for a day. But you don't need the beer. You don't need the cigarettes. If you add up all those $10, it adds up. Definitely.
Appreciate the call, Jake. Thanks so much for your time today.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. You can join our conversation about Iowa's homeless population at 1-866-780-9100. You can find us on Twitter at IPR Talk or email us at theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Again, the phone number 1-866-780-9100. Have you or a family member ever struggled to maintain housing? Call us and tell us about your situation. Tim, when you heard that, did it sound reasonable to you that sometimes it's just a matter of people not having the money management skills?
Sure. And Jake's, there are a lot of examples of folks like Jake, I think, that don't end up in a homeless shelter. And we'd love it if we could help, you know, find people when they were kind of on the verge of homelessness and help them to get those money management skills or counseling or whatever it might be. Fortunately, there are a lot of good service providers for exactly that kind of thing, money management, budget management, developing a savings plan, developing a family budget. So when people move out on their own, they'll be able to manage funds and not become homeless again, hopefully.
I'd like to touch on what Tim was saying. I myself have used money management programs and can contest that they're wonderful. Back in 2008, I believe it was, I was struggling financially. And I went through GreenPath, which is a nonprofit organization out of Madison, Wisconsin. And they helped me tremendously to formulate a budget, stay on a budget. And I'm fortunate in this situation that I'm in now to have some money stashed off to the side to help with a down payment on an apartment. And like Jake was saying, that $10 that your friend might give you, I turn around and put in a savings account. Because if you think about it, there are 4 weeks in a month. If you got $10 each week, that's $40 per month that you could be putting away. And by the end of the year, kind of rough on the math here, I would figure probably about $200 extra a month in a savings account. And there are some efficiencies here in the Cedar Rapids area that rent out for $295 a month. And if more people would do that, the need for homeless shelters, I feel, would diminish, and we could more focus on, like Tim was saying, catch them before they're on the verge of homelessness and direct them in a different direction to where we can better use those shelters for the people that are coming out of prison who don't have anywhere to go, the people that cannot really make it on their own without assistance. And there are those folks out there. I know my mom has some mental illnesses that don't allow her to get a job, but she's doing the best she can. And it's just the point of it is you cannot give up when you're in the situation. Any situation you're in, you cannot give up. There is always a way out, and you just have to be patient and use your resources.
Chris, let me ask you, how confident are you? You mentioned that you were homeless once before. How confident are you if you get this apartment lined up that this is going to be the time that you're able to make it work?
I have to be confident because I am fixing to get married here in December to a wonderful, wonderful girl that I have known since January. She has had some issues herself. She has a 3-year-old son. I have a 4-year-old son. I have to, I don't want to say force it to work, but I have to do the right things, and I'm confident because I have those resources here through Mission of Help Shelter, through Tim. I know I can easily say, hey, I need some help. I'm not ashamed to say, hey, I'm struggling here. Help me out before I end up back in the shelter.
All right. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. We're inviting you to join our conversation. We're going to turn to some members of the YMCA in Des Moines and some work there and a big grant coming to build a new shelter in the Des Moines metro area. We'll talk about that after the break. If you want to join us, 1-866-780-9100 is the number to call. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. In 2009, there were more than 38,000 homeless or near homeless in our state, a 38% increase from 2008. Iowa's homeless shelters and assistance programs cannot meet the need of the growing population. And this hour, we're speaking with representatives of the YMCA of Greater Des Moines, which just received a grant from HUD for $243,000. It's from Shelter Plus Care, which is a program to help work with those who have disabilities. Joining me now is Vernon Delpass, the president and CEO of the YMCA of Greater Des Moines, and Emily Manier, director of the Men's Residence Program at the Riverfront YMCA of Greater Des Moines. Thank you both for being here.
It was great to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
Well, let's just talk about first this grant, which had to be good news, exciting news. I mean, I know that you've received HUD funding in the past, but that seems – is that substantial, that amount?
Yes, it is. We're very excited about that. It was – we weren't sure we were going to hear, so when it came out and we actually saw it in the paper first, we were very excited about that and still don't have all the details. But that's it's a new program for us that will – the Shelter Plus Care helps to fund housing for people with a mental and or physical disability and then surround them with a level of support that they need in order to really thrive and hopefully improve their living condition.
I don't know. I know that you heard the beginning half of the program. You mentioned that this is going to help serve those with a mental or physical disability. I think there can be sometimes an assumption on the public's behalf that, well, everyone that's in a shelter must have some sort of, you know, a mental ailment or some sort of condition that caused them to be there. And let me ask you, Emily, is that the case?
It's not always the case. This specific grant that we're talking about, this will be available for people who have severe mental health issues, chronic substance abuse, a diagnosis of HIV or AIDS, and that will be one component of our program. But, you know, there are people that are homeless for all different kinds of reasons, a continuum, going through divorce, an eviction, a layoff, can't afford child support, and just can't do market rate apartments, all the way up to the more severe mental health issues.
One of the things that I say, and I continue to remind people, that we're all one bad decision or one bad break away from needing something like that.
And I talked in the billboard and in the promo for the program. Could this happen to you? Because I think many of us are under the assumption, no, it couldn't happen to me. But in this economy, people who would have never expected to find themselves in this position are losing homes, are being foreclosed upon, and many may not end up in shelters, may end up with family or friends. But are you having to serve, Emily, people that never expected to be in this position?
Yes, definitely. We're getting a lot of guys that come in and they say that. You know, I've never expected to be here. I have a college degree. I owned my own home. And so there are definitely things hitting the economy. And like you said, maybe they go to family or friends first, but that can only last so long. And so they're having to kind of start fresh and transition again.
I did some little research before the show. The National Coalition for the Homeless talked about, you know, a series of issues that can affect this population: foreclosure, poverty, eroding work opportunities. And one of the things it talked about, decline in public assistance. Have you seen over the course of the shift from welfare to work that there is a declining, Vernon, a shift in resources available for this kind of population?
Well, absolutely. With the economic challenges that we're facing today have been a challenge for everybody. It doesn't, you know, and so that certainly has an impact. And yes, it is more challenging to do that and more difficult to qualify also.
Mm-hmm. And Emily, you know, when we heard from Chris in the first half hour of the program, he has a job. He goes to work from the shelter every day. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I don't think people expect someone that is homeless to have employment, but they do on it, you know.
Definitely. I would say that approximately 50% of the men who live at the YMCA, they are earning they're earning their income.
But it's a matter of if up to nearly 80% of it is expected for housing, that's a substantial part.
Right. Or they have child support or, you know, other bills and debt, medical bills.
Medical bills is another one that has kind of increased considerably lately, of people who have either lost their health insurance or, you know, have kind of exceeded the limits of their health insurance. And so it has really put a financial pressure on them.
Mm-hmm. We want you to join our conversation. If you have a question or comment, 1-866-780-9100. You can email us at The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Find us on Twitter at IPR Talk. If you or a family member have ever struggled to maintain housing, we want to hear from you this morning at 1-866-780-9100. When we talk about this grant, I know that our producer told me that one of the interesting things is that often shelters are set up in existing structures, existing buildings. And are you going to have the opportunity to build a new structure here in Des Moines?
We are. We're. It is actually under construction today, not far from the studio where we're sitting in, and it's been something that we've been working on for about 7 years now, and finally found a great location thanks to our friends at Polk County. It was the site. It's 2 Southwest 9th Street, the site of the old Polk County Interim Jail. It's almost completely down now, and in the next 12 months, we'll build a new 140-room facility that will have a 140 efficiency apartments as well as a lot of space for support programs.
Mm-hmm. And was there a struggle to find this location? Am I remembering correctly that, you know, you had a lot of that not in my backyard feeling? Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. It was a struggle. And like I said, I'm not sure what we would have done had the folks with Polk County not came through for us, because it was we had a couple of other options on the table, and folks in the community, even though by and large our, you know, the guys that stay with us or I mean, our Emily works with them every day. She can, you know, certainly speak to that. But They're good people. They're trying to get their life back to in order, and it was unfortunate, but certainly it was a challenge.
Is that a misperception, Emily, that a shelter is unsafe, or that those residing in a shelter might be unsafe?
I think I can speak to the YMCA.
Sure.
And we have – it's kind of a good mix in between a shelter and an apartment, because they do have privacy and independence, but they also have support and rules and regulations. And so it's kind of this in-between type of program. I would say that the guys at the Y, they're trying. They're paying rent. They're following rules. And if they're not going to, they're not going to last there very long, because we do have zero tolerance for alcohol and drugs and those kinds of things. So definitely safety is our priority.
All right. Well, and Vernon, let me ask you, because I guess I don't know. I know you were speaking to the YMCA, but do different shelters have different rules and typically?
Yes, they do. However, certain funding sources that we have give us the rules that we have to hold people accountable to, and any other similar facility that has that same funding source would have the same set of rules. So, but there are differences, especially the difference in a facility like ours that's not an emergency shelter. We do screen. We have an intake process, and not everybody who comes through the door and wants to live with us is going to qualify because of that.
All right. Well, we're going to take a couple calls, and also we've got an email from Peter in Iowa City who writes, Iowa City just passed a controversial panhandling ordinance on the front lines of shelters. What effect do ordinances like these or anti-homelessness measures in general have on the homeless population? Emily, have you, you know, heard complaints from residents who say, you know, I've tried to, you know, get work by standing on a corner, or is that not really something you hear about?
I haven't heard a lot about that here in Des Moines at the Y. I think a lot of guys are, instead of doing that, they're doing temp work with different temp agencies in the area, and that's what I hear about.
You know, we have 1,000 minimum of 1,000 people a day that come through the Y, not the housing piece of it, but the other part. And there's never been an issue where any of the people who live with us has been standing in the front trying to, you know, get money from anyone. It's just in our case, it hasn't been an issue. In others, possibly it would be. But I'll tell you, there are a lot of people who need temporary work. There's a lot of work available for them.
All right. You're listening to The Exchange on Iowa Public Radio. We invite you to join our conversation at theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Find us on Twitter at IPR Talk, or give us a call at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. Vernon, before the program began, you were explaining to me that you're looking at a new way of serving people. Talk to me about that.
Well, that's correct. There's a shift that actually was initiated by HUD from transitional housing to what is called permanent supportive housing. In the past, the funding from HUD has been about 75% of their funding for transitional, 25% for permanent. And that is over the next 3 or 4 years will shift the other way around. 75% will be for permanent housing, 25% for transitional. And the theory being that transitional housing has moved people out too soon and too quickly, and it puts them back in the system. They end up back in the legal system, back at someplace like Broadlawns, which, again, costs us more money. And so what you need to do is keep them in good, permanent, supportive housing as long as they need to be because, you know, we have guys that will not ever move out and be able to be capable of living alone. They need some level of permanent support. If the family is not there for them, then where else are they going to go?
Does that mean since you will – I mean, it makes sense that for some, this means that you'll eventually have fewer returning. You know, you talk about why you need a recidivism programs in prison so that if you get them some training that the revolving door stops. And similar situation that if you can get people some financial management skills or get them some assistance. But on the other hand, if there are some that you're saying will need permanent help, do you have to have more beds?
Well, that could be an issue down the road. Hopefully, it will kind of slow down the revolving door process over time. But I still think in our case, after – you know, maybe it takes another year than what they would have before, they're still – you know, we can help them in a way they can transition back out into other type of housing when they're ready. So in the end, getting them into permanent housing as soon as possible is the best thing for them.
One of our listeners writes that it's any tiny thing that can crush the homeless, a lack of ID, difficulty acquiring a birth certificate, denial of an application for a savings account, a lack of work for an employer who requires an account to receive payroll, you know, requires a savings account for automatic, you know, withdrawals or in this case, actually automatic payroll. But Emily, I mean, do you find – are you able to help in these kinds of things for the men that are living at the YMCA or are there other programs that do that or do you put them in touch with them?
A little bit of both. We have case managers. We have 4 case managers at the YMCA and that's kind of their goal to help them – to help the clients with their goals. And so like the listener wrote in that to get help with an ID, you know, we can refer them where to get those things, give them all of the information, how to do it. We do need an ID for someone to check into the YMCA, just that's part of our screening, you know, to keep things safe. But case managers are there to either help them with it or refer them to the most appropriate place. Mm-hmm.
In our case, all of the places that you need to get those services or within walking distance. And even in our new facility, they'll still be within walking distance. So all of those services are available, you know, in a very close proximity here.
Yeah, because that I noticed as you looked at the map of where many of the homeless clusters were. One, it's the larger population centers, which just stands to reason because that's where more people live. But two, is it because if you're struggling with a place to live, obviously sometimes it can be a transportation issue. I can't get a job because I don't have a car. I can't get a car because I don't have a job. That kind of cycle where so you need to be in a bigger community that has public transportation. Is that
public transportation as well as just more services in general. Mm-hmm. I mean, we do have, you know, Broadlawns Hospital that anyone
County
can
hospital.
Walk into,
mm-hmm.
you know, and not every community is going to have that. And we have many, many services here in Polk County and especially in downtown Des Moines that wouldn't be available in other communities.
All right. Let's talk to Linda. Linda is calling from Northeast Iowa. Linda, thank you for joining the exchange today.
Hi. One aspect that causes homelessness has been the flood of 2008, and I am essentially homeless and have been since the flood. I've been spending a little bit of my retirement and sometimes my insurance money for rebuilding the house and keeping in an apartment, and I'm currently living in a little fairly rundown motel while waiting for my new house to be finished. But I definitely, maybe I'm not technically homeless and having to be in a shelter, but I feel as if I'm homeless and the money that I'm supposed to be paying to rebuild this house, I'm having, because I'm also haven't worked since 2008. and don't even get interviews. I apply and apply and apply. And so I think I think personally, and maybe not technically, I qualify as homeless because I'm living in this little, very rundown little hotel. And so there's a lot of people. Pardon?
Well, and that's a position probably did you ever expect to find yourself in?
Oh, no, I'm a white-collar worker. No, I should never, you know, I shouldn't, this shouldn't be happening. And it's really been hard on my teenage son because, you know, he's split. He goes to his dad sometimes, but really would prefer to be with me. And thankfully, the motel gave us two little adjoining rooms for the price of one. I mean, they're very nice people. But, you know, it's been, I can see by his demeanor and his, I don't know, sullenness or lethargy or whatever, that it's been having an effect on him. And we had hoped to get out at the end of April. And now we're not sure if we're going to be able to get out at the end of July. It just seems to keep going on and on and on. And pretty soon, you know, I'm going to have spent all the money that I'm supposed to be spending on building the house on monthly motel rent. And then what will happen?
Mm-hmm. And Linda, what is the one thing that would be the most assistance for you at this point?
If I could find a job, because it's getting to the point where I'm so worried about, because between paying the interest only, the loan portion of the house that's being built, the interest only, because it's a construction loan, and then paying the motel, and then having to pay for eating out all the time because there's no cooking really that I can do in there. I'm just going through water money like it's water.
Sure.
And so it may not be long before I'm in one of these actual shelters, which I don't know that I could do because of the pride factor. They say pride goeth before fall, but, you know, and maybe that's why, because you just can't bring yourself to say that I've got to go and live in a shelter. Or I've got to go and apply for welfare. And, you know, I had an incident where I gashed my foot open on their door, and I really should have gone to the hospital and gotten stitches, but I didn't go because of no insurance and no money. So, you know, there's homelessness in lots of degrees, and I just thought maybe your guests could discuss the people from the flood, because, for example, in Cedar Rapids, it's worse than where I live, the number of people that were damaged by the flood. And I'm sure many of them are homeless in some form of fashion or living in mold-infested places.
Sure. Linda, we'll talk about that. Thanks so much for your call, and good luck. We wish you luck.
Thank you very much.
And that is a prime example of, as I mentioned earlier, that we're all about, you know, one bad break away, and you just never know when something like that's going to happen. And I think it's up to us. We can't depend totally on the government. Obviously, there's a role there, but we, as those of us that have been blessed with good fortune these days, need to step up and be able to help people like Linda in some way to get back on their feet. And then,
do that? Somebody's listening today and says, "Oh my goodness, you know, I'm feeling very fortunate. I need to do something." What should they do?
Well, I think there's a lot of opportunity there with not just certainly there's help financially. There's in our case and in any shelter never has the resources that they need, but also supporting, you know, a food bank and donating clothing, volunteering. You know, all of those things are ways that people can give back. And I think we just, you know, we have to step up and not totally depend on the government for that. But it's we the people have to take care of each other and help people like Linda and others that are really trying to help themselves.
Emily, when our producer was doing research for this program, we discovered the new numbers from last year. The 2009 numbers were released from the Iowa Finance Authority on housing or on homeless, and discovered, you know, that 38% increase. But, you know, there's not a press release that went out about this. These numbers weren't, you know, we didn't have the governor at a news conference, excuse me, talking about these. Is that part of the problem, that this is just sort of under the radar? And, you know, do you wish there was more attention to it?
I think that can definitely be the problem. And like you said, it also it makes people not understand all of the different, you know, they think everyone in a shelter doesn't have a job. Well, that's not true. And so the more attention that there can be to what's going right, definitely is important.
And if you could ask, what is there a single important piece of legislation that you would want either state lawmakers or federal lawmakers to look at that would be of assistance, Emily Vernon? I mean, or is it more that you need support from individuals?
Well, I would say individuals, we need the, you know, obviously we need other support too. We need legislators to support it, but by and large, there is support there available. But individuals need to step up and help others that are in need and understand. I think part of it is education. They have this stigma that someone like the caller we just mm-hmm. had, that she did something wrong. She didn't ask to be flooded.
Mm-hmm.
People don't ask to lose their job. They don't ask to get sick and have exorbitant medical bills. Those things happen in their life. And now, not that on occasion people don't make bad decisions and you say, okay, well, you know, you made that decision.
Yeah, we
you
had
to
one
do
of
it.
The caller who
yeah.
said he felt he had made yeah. bad decisions and had to turn things
that
around.
But at some point, even, you know, we have, I think it's around 40% that are in our place that have had some kind of a legal issue, either coming out of incarceration or jail or something. Well, but they made a mistake. They said, I made a mistake. I've paid my dues. I'm ready to move on. Someone help me. Give me a break here, you know. And so we have to help people like that.
All right. Thank you, Emily. Any final words real quick?
Well, I was just going to say, and, you know, on that, how many of us have made bad decisions and we've just been fortunate to have a support system in place to help us before it became, as big of a deal as having to move into a shelter or transitional housing. So a lot of people don't have the
remember
support.
That, is other yeah. words, is what you want to say.
Yeah.
Well, Emily Minear, Vernon Delpass, thank you so much for your time. We're out of time today. You've been listening to The Exchange, produced today by Lindsay Moon and Catherine Perkins. Technical support from Dennis Reese and John Pemble. Podcasting and on-demand audio of the program available at iowapublicradio.org. And we welcome your comments and questions at The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. I'm Janine Beck. Thanks for listening.